In the past, on this show, I've said that flaunting your flaws can make you more persuasive and more likable. I've shared peer-reviewed studies that have shown how making a mistake can make you appear more competent. I've reviewed research that discovered how job applicants who admit weaknesses get more job offers. I've explained why Avis sold more rental cars by telling people they were second best, and how my podcast got more listeners when I told people not to listen. Revealing a weakness can become a strength. But that's not what happened in 1991 when Gerald Ratner, CEO behind the major British jewellery company Ratner's, said this.
We even sell a pair of earrings for under £1, gold earrings as well. Some people say, well, that's cheaper than a prawn sandwich from Marks and Spencer's. But I have to say, the sandwich will probably last longer than the earrings, but anyway.
Gerald Ratner was highlighting a weakness, revealing a flaw. But he didn't become more likable. His brand wasn't considered more attractive. No, the opposite happened. In the days that followed, the Ratner Group lost £500 million in value, which very nearly resulted in the group's collapse. But why? Why does flaunting a flaw work in some contexts, but not in others? Well, in today's episode of Nudge, I'll explain just that, sharing messaging advice that Ratner dearly needed to learn and advice that all of you should follow. All of that coming up after this quick break. The podcast I'd like to recommend today is the D2C Pod, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. The D2C Pod is a podcast all about all the things direct to consumer. The hosts cover everything from starting, growing, and optimizing e-commerce stores and D2C brands. If you're interested in the stories behind your favorite consumer brands, this is a podcast for you. To start, I'd suggest checking out episode 318, which features the CMO of Feastables. So, listen to D2C Pod wherever you get your podcasts. So before we dive into Ratner's, let's first cover the psychological studies behind this principle. The idea that highlighting flaws can increase likability, it has a name. It is known as the pratfall effect. And this effect was first described by researcher Elliot Aronson back in the 60s. In his experiments, male students from the University of Minnesota were asked to listen to tape recordings of a contestant answering questions in a quiz show. These participants didn't know it, but the contestant they were listening to was actually a paid actor. As they listened, participants heard the contestant answer increasingly difficult questions, and yet the contestant answered with incredible knowledge, almost always answering correctly, with 92% of the questions answered right. The twist came at the end of the quiz. Some of the participants heard the contestant spilling a cup of coffee down themselves and apologizing for doing so, saying, "Oh God, I'm so clumsy, I'm so sorry." While others simply heard the contestant end the quiz, leave the stage, and no coffee was spilt. Here's where it gets interesting. Aronson's research found that the knowledgeable quizzer, who spilt coffee down himself, was rated to be more attractive and more likable, while the identical quizzer, who answered the same number of questions in the exact same way but didn't spill coffee, was rated as less attractive and less likable. It's paradoxical, but measurable. Showing a flaw increases your likability. And this effect has lots of applications. In previous shows, I've shared how researcher Joe Sylvester found that revealing a flaw as a job applicant makes you more likely to get the job. I've shared studies I've run where I've told people not to listen to my podcast. Paradoxically, in doing so, it made people more likely to listen. Head back to episode 70 if you want to hear that. And there's new research to back this up. Researchers from Carnegie University recruited hundreds of people to discuss controversial topics, polarizing subjects such as whether abortion should be legal and if undocumented immigrants who meet certain requirements should be allowed to remain in a country legally. These are issues where different people have vastly different views. The researchers wanted to see if they could shift participants' pre-existing beliefs. To do so, both groups were shown a persuasive appeal message attempting to encourage the reader to change their mind. These appeals contained everything you would expect. Facts, figures, expert opinion, the use of emotion, everything that's typically used to try and change opinion. But there was one twist. Half of the appeals expressed an opinion confidently, showing no weaknesses, no flaws. The other half of the appeals expressed doubt. They said, "This is all the evidence, but while we've thought carefully about the issue, we aren't completely convinced that we are right." Now think about this for a second. Which do you think is more persuasive? See, I'd assume it was the former. Surely expressing your argument without doubt is more persuasive. After all, that's the strategy almost all of us follow. But this isn't what the researchers found. Expressing doubt about a contentious issue actually increased persuasion. Sharing a doubt, highlighting a flaw, was more convincing. In fact, it was particularly effective at convincing people who already had very strong beliefs. Those who were steadfast in their views about abortion and migration, well, they were more likely to shift their views when the message expressed doubt. Showing a flaw, like clumsiness, makes you more likable. Sharing a doubt makes you more persuasive. And some marketers have picked up on this. VW ran famous ads that highlighted the flaws in their Volkswagen station wagon. The infamous ad shows the door to the wagon open with a woman looking in. The text beneath reads, "If you can sell her on this, you can sell her on anything." And yet, despite highlighting weaknesses, this classic series of VW ads was voted the number one campaign of all time in the Advertising Age's 1999 review of a century of advertising. Marmite has run with the tagline, "You'll either love it or hate it," for the past 30 years. And Avis, as I mentioned, have celebrated for 50 years how they are only the second most popular rental car company, but it means they try harder. Robert Cialdini, in his book Persuasion, has a fairly novel example of this. He shares how Elizabeth I, Queen of England, highlighted the sexist views directed towards her to create one of the most celebrated speeches of her reign. The speech occurred at Tilbury in 1588 when, while addressing her troops who were expecting a sea invasion from Spain, she dispelled soldiers' concerns that, as a woman, she was not up to the rigours of battle. She said, "I know I have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a king, and a king of England too." It's reported that cheers after this speech were so long and so loud that officers had to ride amongst the men, ordering them to restrain themselves so the queen could continue. All this is to say that highlighting a weakness seems to be a smart choice. And yet, when Gerald Ratner showcased his company's weaknesses, it badly backfired. To explain, let me provide a bit of background. Ratner's was an extremely successful chain of jewellers. Gerald, the CEO, grew the company from 130 stores to 2,500, becoming one of the largest jewellers worldwide. Back in the 80s, the brand was celebrated.
Ratner's great success has been to extend jewellery buying into a whole new social class. Young people now buy jewellery on impulse, as a fashion item, rather than as a once-in-a-lifetime investment.
Yet, it had a bit of a name for being cheap. This, admittedly, was highlighted in their marketing. Just like EasyJet and Aldi today, Ratner's celebrated their cheapness by displaying fluorescent orange posters, advertising cut-price bargains, and offering low-price ranges.
The technique is brutally simple. A drastic reduction of price sustained by high-volume turnover. It shattered the old image of jewellery forever.
Although Ratner's was regarded as tacky, the shops and the jewellery were nevertheless extremely popular with the public. That was until Gerald Ratner made his famous speech at the Institute of Directors at the Royal Albert Hall on April 23rd, 1991. Here's what he said.
"Good afternoon, Mr. President, Your Royal Highness, and thank you, Mr. President, for asking me to address such a prestigious audience. Also in Ratner's, we sell gifts as well as jewellery. Things like a teapot for £2. Or we've got this imitation book that you lay on your coffee table. Pages don't actually open, but they have beautiful curled up corners with imitation antique dust. I know it's, you might say, it's not in the best possible taste, but we sold 250,000 of them last year. We also do this nice decanter. It's cut glass, and it comes complete with six glasses on a silver-plated tray that your butler could bring you in and serve you drinks on. And it's really only cost £4.95. People say to me, how can you sell this for such a low price? I say, because it's total crap. We even sell a pair of earrings for under £1, gold earrings as well. Some people say, well, that's cheaper than a prawn sandwich from Marks and Spencer's. But I have to say, the sandwich will probably last longer than the earrings, but anyway.
Ratner's comments didn't make the firm more likeable. No, quite the opposite. Overnight, the firm lost $500 million in value, stores were left empty as customers left for competitors, and Ratner was forced to go on Terry Wogan's popular chat show to apologise the very next day. Only after resigning as chairman and changing the company name did Ratner start to recover. In fact, the event was so noteworthy that the term doing a Ratner has become synonymous with making catastrophic business mistakes. And all of this begs the question, what's the difference between what Ratner said and what Queen Elizabeth said? Why did Ratner fail when showing a flaw, but VW didn't? How can showing a doubt make people more persuasive, but also drive them away from buying Ratner's products? Well, it's down to one important element of this principle that Ratner completely ignored, a messaging tip that all of us need to remember. And I'll share it after this quick break. Finding a service solution that helps you better connect with customers and keep them happy can feel impossible. It's like trying to remember the name of someone you've just met at a networking event. I've made this mistake before, introducing a colleague to my new friend Dan, only to find out his name was actually Ian. Being personal with your customers is important, but keeping on top of all that information can be very hard. That's where HubSpot's all-new Service Hub comes in. It brings service and success together on one powerful platform for the first time ever. It's got an AI-powered help desk and an AI-powered chatbot that handles frontline tickets fast. Plus, it comes with a customer success workspace that helps reps anticipate customer needs. Plus, it never forgets a first name. All of that can help you scale support and drive retention and revenue. That means better service and happier customers at every stage of the journey. Visit hubspot.com/service to do more for your customers today. To explain where Ratner went wrong, let's revisit Elliot Aronson's experiment that I shared right at the start of the show. See, Aronson's 1966 experiment had one important aspect that I haven't mentioned yet. The participants who listened to the quiz contestant didn't only listen to one intelligent contestant, they heard two contestants. Some participants heard the contestant with incredible knowledge almost always answering questions correctly with a 92% correct answer rate. Other sets of participants heard a mediocre contestant, one that only answered a few questions correctly. After the questioning, the strong performing contestant admitted to a stellar high school career marked with academic and non-academic success, while the unremarkable contestant described an ordinary high school career earning average grades with weak involvement in extracurriculum. Just like with before, half of the time these individuals spilt coffee down themselves and half of the time they didn't. Like I mentioned already, the knowledgeable contestant was seen as more attractive after spilling the coffee. But that was not the case for the unremarkable contestant. No, in fact, the opposite happened. For the unremarkable contestant, well, they were seen as less attractive and less likable after spilling the coffee. So, to clarify, the competent contestant was seen as more likable after spilling coffee down himself, while the incompetent contestant was seen as less likable for doing the exact same thing. This part is vital. Flaunting a flaw on its own isn't enough to boost likability. Instead, the pratfall effect only works if you combine that weakness with a strength. It's that combination of liking and respect that makes flaunting flaws work. And you can see this when reflecting on all the examples we've shared so far. Queen Elizabeth combined her supposed weakness, saying, "I know I have the body of a weak, feeble woman," with her supposed strength, "But I have the heart and stomach of a king." Avis combines their weakness, we're only second best, with a strength, so we try harder. And Mar might do this in one line, stating you either love it or you hate it. To make the practical effect work, you can't just highlight your weakness, you have to combine the weakness with your strengths. Richard Shotton, who's written extensively about this principle, shares his favourite example of the practical effect in his book, The Choice Factory. It comes from Ian Banks' 1984 debut novel titled The Wasp Factory. This was an incredibly popular novel that was listed in the Independent's top 100 books of the 20th century, yet its popularity did not come for a while. Richard writes that Banks was 30 when he finally persuaded a publisher to release one of his works. The delay was not for the want of trying. Over the previous 14 years, he had written four novels, all of which had been rejected by publishers. And yet, despite this struggle for reputation, Banks did something very unconventional with his book cover when he finally got published. He insisted that the novel included both positive and negative reviews within the blurb. As many Jordan Peterson fans will know, it is commonplace for book covers to be adorned with purely positive reviews. But Banks wanted to combine the positive and the negative. The Sunday Express, for example, called it a silly, gloatingly sadistic and grisly yarn of a family of Scots lunatics. The Times was even more damning. As a piece of writing, The Wasp Factory soars to the level of mediocrity. While the Financial Times stated a positive, saying it's exceptional quality and impossible to put down. Banks put all of these reviews on his book cover, and his approach paid off. By embracing the pratfall effect, he got noticed and dramatically boosted his book's likability. The sheer outrage towards many of the critics' negative reviews meant readers saw it as a powerfully moving book that had credibility. That publicity helped Banks become a bestseller, while positioning him as an independent thinker. If you follow Ian Banks' approach and combine your strengths and your weaknesses, the pratfall effect will work. It'll make you appear more likable, making your arguments more persuasive, your ads more convincing, and your book covers more alluring. So back to Ratner. What should he have told his peers at the Royal Albert Hall? Well, rather than purely showcasing his product's flaws, he should have combined it with a strength. For example, he could have said this: "We also do cut glass sherry decanters complete with six glasses on a silver plated tray that a butler can serve your drinks on, all for just £4.95. And yet people say your product is crap. Well, to that we say it's a lot cheaper than a butler and it's far more popular too." Ratner failed because he admitted that his product was totally crap. By being purely negative, he put off buyers, ostracised the public, and looked like a money-hoarding villain. Yet studies and real-world examples show that revealing a flaw can have the opposite effect when used correctly. So don't be purely positive, but also don't be purely negative. Combine a bit of both to grab attention and sell more. Take my newsletter. I could tell you that it's the best newsletter on marketing in the world, but that wouldn't be very persuasive. Instead, I should admit that it's probably not for everyone. Each week, I do a deep dive on a specific nudge and explain how it can be applied to marketing. And sure, over 3,000 committed marketers love the newsletter and they open it every week, but dozens of others unsubscribe every week as well. This newsletter isn't for everyone, and you might hate it. But if you want to give it a try, head to nudgepodcast.com and click newsletter in the menu to sign up. And don't worry, if you think it's total crap, you can unsubscribe at any time. As always, folks, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Creating solo episodes like this genuinely takes dozens and dozens of hours. So if you did enjoy today's show, I'd appreciate it if you shared it with a friend, if you left a review, or just make sure you subscribe wherever you listen. Doing so really does make the difference. Okay, that's all from me this week. As always, I'm your host, Phil Agnew, and I'll be back next week for another episode of Nudge. And believe me, you will either love or hate that episode. Cheers.